Hello and welcome to the Diecast. Let me rephrase that. The grand return of the Diecast. Get a round of applause, everyone in the room. We're back after an extended hiatus, and we have some great news for you. Not only am I back, not only is Mr. Daniel Callbacker.
Yeah, learn to pronounce my name.
Callbacker is back. We have a new co-host. You've heard him before on the show. He's none other than Mr. Tyler Major.
Hi, thanks for having me, and I hope I don't annoy the shit out of you.
So, if you listen to us regularly, you've heard Tyler before, and if you like Tyler, good news, he's on every single episode from here on out. If you don't like Tyler, then you better stop listening, or tell us in the comments
please,
if you
please
hate
don't
him.
Get rid of our viewers, our listeners.
All 13 of them?
I'm
all 13
forever.
Of them.
What if I'm on the show and I don't like Tyler?
Oh, I hear a voice in the corner. That is our special guest, Mr. Paul Gandersman.
I don't like Tyler.
And why are you here, Paul?
I'm just kidding. I'm only here for the Tyler.
Oh, there you go.
For
I'm already amassing followers. It's only a matter of time before I usurp you.
Is that your plan?
Yes.
He's playing the long game.
Yeah, I'm playing the long
game. Believe it or not, there is somebody in this room who does not have a penis. Ashley.
Hi there. Hi, I still do not have a penis. That's good.
That we know of.
So thank you, Paul and Ashley, for joining us for today's episode. How have you been?
Not bad.
Just Anna, both of you?
That's fine. It was a long day. Tired.
Not enjoying this stormy Austin day?
I like it when I'm inside. And it's storming outside. And I can look at it, but not have to get wet.
That was so interesting.
I know. You should keep every moment of that in this podcast.
Ashley, are you pro or con against rain?
I'm pro.
Okay.
I think it's good. I like going out in the rain and potentially getting pneumonia and, you know, running against traffic and causing mayhem in the rain because no one really understands that it's coming from this tiny voiced person.
Wonderful.
So they're like confused.
They're very
like,
confused.
How is this happening right now? Where is this voice coming from?
Exactly. And then you see the thunderbolts and maybe you think it's God or something and you wonder why he's sucking on helium. That sort of thing, so.
I know this is a board game podcast. You click play on this because you want to hear about board games.
Tough shit!
I'll take 2 minutes to segue from weather so I can pimp into the storm.
Oh, yes!
The best movie of the summer. Forget any human beings. Forget Richard Armitage, the Hobbit guy. Forget Matt Walsh, the guy from Veep, who's our main character. Forget the lady from The Walking Dead. The star of Into the Storm, the reason why you should see it, is a car we're calling Badass Fucking Tank Car. It's a giant tornado-proof car that gets all the hero moments in the movie.
Wait a minute. How can it actually be tornado-proof?
Well, go see the movie.
Go see the movie, I guess? Okay.
It is a tank-like car. It looks like a Batmobile. It's driven by Matt Walsh, a.k.a. The guy with the mustache on Veep. And it's literally a half-assed found footage version of Final Destination, where instead of death, it is a tornado.
Co-star, though. Fire Tornado.
There's a fire tornado. A tornado goes over a big pile of gasoline and lights on fire, and it's a big fire tornado that sucks a man up and kills him.
You see the body burning.
Well, look, I know you're probably saying, where are the board game talk? Where's the board game talk, guys?
Tough shit!
You don't like the storm, get the fuck out of here.
I haven't seen it, and I might not like it, so should I kind of just stand halfway between this room and the door?
Paul, this is a movie with...
Just straddle the line.
The final showdown is between an F5 tornado, the biggest tornado in human history. All the meteorologists in the movie say so. Showdown from this tornado and a badass fucking tank car, which is blocking a tunnel so everyone can try to survive.
Do they do some sort of, like, landscape shot where they're, like, coming at each other from, like,
There's a wide shot. There's a wide shot of the car having pinned itself into the mud using these special stakes. Like, with what... It's pinned in the mud, the tornado's approaching, and the car is, like, struggling against the wind. And the big heroic battles, whether or not the car will stay pinned in the mud. I'm describing an actual movie, and it is incredible. Fuck Star-Lord. Badass fucking tank car, guys.
But does Hero it have of the Bill, Summer. Does it have Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt?
No, it has Matt Walsh, and that lady from The Walking Dead, and the guy from The Hobbit.
Oh, wow.
And the guy from The Hobbit.
All star cast.
Good enough for me.
All right, so let's move on to actual board games. Right, on our board game show.
Boo.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I disagree.
We are here talking about board games right now, but weather and weather-related movies. Ashley, what did you want to talk about? Weather-related movies or board games?
I suppose, because there are no sharks in this tornado, I'd go with board games.
Weather-related board games.
Oh.
Were there any weather-related board games?
There is a game called CO2, which is about all everyone works together to try to prevent global warming from getting worse.
That's cool.
Not real. The board game or global warming.
But I'm trying to remember if there are like any direct weather-related board games. Like
I want a tornado game.
Exactly. Let's run from a tornado. Let's try to survive a tornado.
What if there was like, what if each of you played a different person in the truck and you had to do different things to get away from the tornado?
This sounds or like a real-time co-op game of
where
everyone
like one
cooperating.
Of you is the driver and then the other one's like knows the direction that it's going.
Like the
so,
Doppler
so it's person. It's like a combination of Forbidden Desert and like K2, but
and
about
what
tornado.
Space Alert, right?
Like
Space
or Space Cadets Dice Duel.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
And what's great about the game is it could end immediately or it could drag on for like an hour and you're running away from the storm.
I feel like the tornado should gain strength by the cows that it pulls off in pastures.
It feeds off the cow, so it has like cow strength.
Yeah.
Plus 5 cow.
Yeah, exactly.
Plus 5 cow,
like
yeah.
It.
There's
plus
not
five.
Enough racism in this game.
The other alternative. Though,
we can the Europeans can add some in there.
Yes, there should be worker placement going on
yes,
the side.
Yes, with little just brown cubes.
The guys at HQ are like figuring shit out and like.
We have to make the box art like just even more boring. Like, can we fit some sheep on there and maybe a meadow? Like, and not actually show a tornado.
So see, and now I'm gonna be picturing the people. There's two boards. One team plays the people in the car. They're evading tornado, they're playing in real time. Everyone else plays the people at the weather station who are completely safe, but have to play at a more leisurely pace. Because if they make a mistake, everyone else dies. So you have people trying to keep them alive while working at a slower pace, where everyone else has to stay alive in real time. That's my game.
I have it even simpler.
What's yours?
Four people in the car, mm-hmm. one person plays the tornado.
Yeah.
Done!
So it's Descent meets... Yeah, yeah. Meets pastures.
Finger of God is the name of the game.
We just made a bajillion dollars. I'm happy that there's like proof here of ownership.
Yeah, yeah, there is proof. So if any of you motherfuckers rip this shit off, I'm coming after you.
I hate to break it to
Meanwhile,
guys.
Daniel's going to delete this file.
I hate to break it to you guys. There's not a lot of money in the board game business. There really isn't.
What do you know about board games? I've never seen you talk about a board game ever until this moment.
All right, so we're going to go into official board game chat right now. The second we like to call, What You Playing?
What are you playing? You Playing.
As the name of this segment suggests, we're going to go around the circle and talk about what we've been playing. Or what do you want to play? What sounds interesting? What's in your stack to play? Just, you know, give us an idea. Daniel, you're in front of me right now, so go.
Oh, God. One thing I'm looking forward to playing, because I haven't played it yet. There's this person in this room.
Get to it already.
Hey, shut up. You are a guest. You hold your tongue.
You're not a real person.
You are not.
I'm a meeple.
Not in my house.
Paul's only a soundboard that I control.
what player? Zing of the day.
So someone in this room did something very nice for me during the hiatus. When I had my birthday. And they bought me the giant fucking Rebel Corvette Tantive IV awesome X-Wing.
The big-ass
thing.
Ship in Return of the Jedi.
Wrong.
Wait.
The
oh my God.
The
I think you need to reconsider your host.
First ship you see in any Star Wars movie, in like the first Star Wars movie.
It's
oh,
the Tantive IV.
I was thinking, no, I was, sorry.
The
I was
thing carrying
of,
Princess Leia.
I was thinking of Squid Guys.
All your 13 listeners
Squid
are gone
Guy
now.
Ship.
Squid Guy?
You're just digging a hole, man. It's getting
oh,
I was never proclaimed to be the greatest Star Wars fan.
Let me tell you something.
Dude.
You need to cut this conversation off because it's a trap.
But back to what Daniel's saying, he's referring to the biggest ship released yet for Fantasy Flight Games' Star Wars X-Wing miniature game, of which him and I have both fallen down the huge black hole of
oh,
recently.
Oh, God, I've spent too much money
on
that.
It looks awesome.
Game.
It's an incredible game.
It's really stupid.
Give them a gist of why this game's incredible before we talk about the Tantive IV.
Well, so this game, really, really fun. You are, if you know zero things about it, you're playing either as the Imperials or the Rebels. You create a little squad of X-Wings and TIE Fighters and all different TIE Fighter variations and A-Wings and Y-Wings and B-Wings and Millennium Falcons and all of those things you want. You customize them with pilots and weapons and other wacky upgrades and things. And then it's a turn-based game where you are simulating a dogfight in space, which is basically what I think everyone in this room was doing when they were a kid anyway. But now it has rules and consequences, and you feel really good when you beat Jacob for the 50th time. It's a good time.
I prefer puppy fights, personally, but...
That's evil.
Dog fights are fine, too.
Dog fight the game. Roll six, shoot your dog's head off. But,
don't get the Michael Vick card.
The thing about X-Wing, which is actually the reason why it's so accessible and popular at this point, is that so many miniature games, you open the box, it's a bunch of little pieces, you have to assemble it, glue it, paint it. X-Wing comes already assembled and already painted. It looks amazing. It's super accessible. It's cheap by miniature game standards. And the Tanto 4, which is about, a foot and a half long?
It's gigantic.
Yeah, it's around a foot and a half long. It's sitting on my shelf right now in my bedroom on display.
I hope you don't have cats.
I do not. But no, and what Jacob was saying there is that everything comes assembled, painted, and not just painted, but painted well.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those. It's one thing to say it's painted, and it's one thing to say it's painted well. Because if you look at the Star Trek version of this, those ships are fucking ugly.
Yeah. For those of you who aren't aware of this, X-Wing and a game called Star Trek Attack Wing borrow their game design from a World War I flying ace game. And Fantasy Flight takes it and says, we're going to add all these beautiful ships, all these cool little rules, all these ways to upgrade. The Star Trek version, which I believe is WizKids, is like micro machines.
Oh, the Wiz...
Yeah, it looks like...
The WizKids stuff is... The HeroClix. Go look at the paint job on any HeroClix on a shelf. It's painful.
And...
Probably because they employ like 5-year-olds.
They are WizKids.
Hey, what do you have against 5-year-olds?
Ashley's not actually 5.
All right.
Paul, stop trying to make yourself look better.
I can live with poor paint jobs if they didn't do the other big tragic error, which is when you buy an X-Wing in the X-Wing miniature game, it's tiny. It's maybe about an inch long. By Millennium Falcon, it's like 6 inches long. Everything's built to scale. The Tantive IV is literally huge.
Yeah.
In the Star Trek game, the Enterprise is the same size as the Defiant. Everything's all the same size.
Yeah,
so all the tiny little shuttlecrafts, the attack ships, are the same size as Galaxy Crash starships. So it's ludicrous. It makes my blood boil when I see it, guys. It makes me so angry.
It's a nerdy thing to get angry about, but yes.
No, it is a thing to get very angry about when you see that it can be done properly.
Properly, yeah.
And also, the other thing I would like to say, going back to the paint job on the Star Trek things, to me, whenever I see them, it looks like... when you would go to the dollar store and you'd see, like, the knockoff version of, like, Wolverine or something like that? And it's, like, it's made in, like, a fifth world country... By an actual 5-year-old, and it's just like, oh, they kind of threw some stuff on there, and like, it's generally the colors, I guess.
It's called Wolf-erine.
Wolf-erine. Yes. It's like that's what it looks like to me. It's just, just bad.
All right. So, as a decoration, do you recommend the Tantive IV?
Yes, I do.
I want to piggyback on that, talking about this, and ask you guys something. Have you yet heard about Star Wars Armada?
Yes.
Yep.
Star Wars Armada. I don't want to talk too much because that'll be subject of a future show. But let's get on that for a second.
Well, so I mean, I saw it on the Fantasy Flight page. I've done as much research as looking at the pictures and drawing my own conclusions, and not reading any of the text they have there to describe anything. But what it looks like to me. Is a way to play larger, more epic battles on a smaller budget because it looks like, I think it's $100 for the core set and it comes with a lot of big ships to fight each other. But they're smaller scale, but everything's 2-scale.
Yeah, it looks really cool. And it looks like a good companion piece to X-Wing. But my main concern is that as someone who's already put hundreds of dollars in X-Wing, I'm not sure if I want to buy Star Wars Armada.
I don't understand that it was $100. Like, that was the thing to me. I was like, I mean, I know I'm going to buy it anyway. It's going to happen.
Well, you can buy it. I'll pay yours.
See, that's exactly what you said about X-Wing in the first place, which I think is hilarious. No, Jacob came up with a deal. He was like, well, you know, Daniel, you already have several of these X-Wing ships. You know, you can just buy the rest of those because obviously I just don't want to sink the money into it. I was like, sure, Jacob, that's fine. Then later on, I found out he had actually skipped ahead of me and bought every other ship that existed. So I had to catch up because, oh, we're playing that game again.
All right, well, before you so rudely interrupted him, Paul was saying something, Daniel. So Paul,
oh,
what were you
shit,
saying?
Dog, yeah. Puppy.
$100 is a lot of money.
Admiral Akbar! That's his fucking name! It just occurred to me that his name is Admiral Akbar, and I knew it the entire time.
If somebody in this room can tell me Admiral Akbar's race, I'll be even more impressed.
Mon Calamari! I knew that immediately! I knew it was Mon Calamari.
He did say the fucking squid guy.
Anyway,
okay.
Daniel's gonna strip that part out of the show just to make you look bad.
No way.
I was the only thing I was gonna say is I do worry about them kind of cannibalizing their own sales.
Yeah,
it's a weird choice to me, and I guess you know when I first saw the image of it on their website, I thought, oh, okay, it must be a very different game. And then I started looking at the pictures, and I'm like, a lot of this looks very similar.
Yeah. So does anybody know if the are the rules kind of somewhat?
It's a different rule set, okay. But there's enough similarities for you to raise an eyebrow.
Yeah, it seems kind of weird. Like, because I
saw
that
mix
too.
And match because the scales are off.
And it looks great, like the pictures that they've got and everything. But I was like, aren't they already making this game? Like,
I've heard some people already online pitch the idea of playing Armada. Every time we get into an actual fight, go to another table and playing X-Wing to solve that fight.
That would be like an all day. Yeah. That would be cool.
I feel like that's the obvious thing that everyone immediately thought of, was just like, yes, that's what we'll do. And I feel like I will do that, actually, which says its own thing about me.
You know, I would say one thing it makes me think of, can I jump in about a game that we've been playing?
It's your turn.
Yeah,
go for it.
Sorry. I just, because it
fuck
directly Daniel. Relates.
Fuck him in the
yeah.
ass.
Yeah. So,
he said X-Wing.
Well, it reminds me of, it's a little different because both are miniatures, but Warhammer and Warhammer 40K and then Warhammer Disc Wars, which is a game Ashley and I've been playing mm-hmm. recently.
Explain Disc Wars, because I've never heard of Disc Wars.
Okay. So, first off, Disc Wars was a game that was out like when I was a kid, and it was a collectible game now, and then Fantasy Flight bought the license, and I don't think it was Warhammer related to begin with. I might be wrong.
That might be why I'm not getting it, because I feel like I know of it, but I don't.
Yeah.
I need the like the rules.
So basically what the game is it's like a fantasy battle game. It's 2 to 4 players, and instead of having miniatures, you have discs, like circular discs.
Oh, with like pictures on them. And
yeah,
stuff. Okay.
And stats, and there's 3 different sizes. You know, like so you can have a little orc, or you can have a big giant flying dragon, which Ashley likes to play with.
I love the dragon.
And what's really cool, and you realize how cool it is once you start playing with it, is the way the discs move is by flipping. So they have a number of flips, which is their move. So you literally flip the disc.
Oh,
flip it again, and then you're trying to, certain kinds of guys are trying to land on other guys to pin them, to attack, and so there's a lot of strategy in it, and it's
sounds
a lot
very
of fun.
Interesting.
The reason I thought about it is because it's the Warhammer universe, but it's like Warhammer Lite and doesn't cost a bunch of money to get in.
Well, yeah, because it's probably cheaper to get the discs.
I think
are cheaper.
The core
set's
$40, and we've played a handful of times and barely feel like we've scratched the surface on what you can do.
Since you said you played it as a kid, is it like a revised version of the old one? So it's not like they're repackaging the old stuff. They're
right.
It's a
revised rule set. Like the old one had this thing like with ranged attacks where you would literally like drop a disc like physically in the air and see what it landed on, which was a little silly. So
I love the dexterity.
Yeah, I was about to say.
They removed that. It's a really fun rule set. I think it's pretty. It's one of those games that you can learn it in about 15 minutes or less. But the strategy is pretty infinite. We're having a lot of fun with that.
It seems like kind of a unique concept. Like the sort of theme is literally playing into the gameplay in that like you're a dragon stomping on people. You know, like that's kind of cool. And so I could see myself.
And it's
that.
Cheap. For the price of this game, you get what, half of a Warhammer set?
Oh, not even.
Yeah.
Yeah, the core set's $40. They've released 2 expansions that came out simultaneously, and those are $30. No, they didn't come out simultaneously with the core. But what they are is they're just additional armies, which is really, really cool.
It's 2-player only?
No, 2 to 4.
Oh, okay.
And it changes a lot. We've played 2-player and 3-player so far, and it changes the game a lot. There's terrain pieces and all sorts of things, and every game's different because you use, like, there's randomization to who picks, like, what terrain goes where, and that
sort
of thing. So
it seems like it's, because I'm somewhat familiar with, like, Warhammer, because I played a little bit when I was younger, but, so it seems like it's what you're saying, like, Warhammer Light, in that you don't have to sink a whole lot of money into these miniatures and then paint them, and then, like, you know, basically go, like, play some sort of tournament just to get your money back, because you've sunk a bunch of money into it, and, like, this seems like it's a little bit more casual, for casual people.
Yeah.
It is. You can play it in 30 minutes or so.
And your armies can always change. You can mix and match.
So are there a lot of options in the game?
Yeah,
as well?
There's a lot of options. There's a lot of options in gameplay, how you arrange the scene and everything. It's pretty good as far as $40 goes.
I know in X-Wing, when you build your fleet, each ship's worth a certain number of points. Each upgrade's worth points. Is there a point system to building armies here?
Yeah, there is. Basically, you're either playing... I can't remember the... I think it's Chaos and Order. You're either Chaos or Order.
Oh, yeah.
And then Chaos... In the core set, they each come with two different armies, but you wouldn't use the full amount of the army. Like, you would only play... You usually play with, like, two
each,
and then and then there's a lot of leftover. So you're constantly mixing and matching and finding combos, and then the other two expansions they've released so far, one for Chaos, one for Order, and they have additional armies and additional things. So there's lots and lots of... I mean, we've probably played 6 times at this point, and I feel like
it's
barely scratched the surface.
Each time,
Yeah.
It sounds fun, man. I'm kind of interested in that now.
Yeah, well, maybe we should play it at some point.
Yeah, but we should. Ashley, have you been playing anything else other than this?
I mean, we have been playing Food Fight, which has been fun.
Is that a card game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of
it. Is it currently out of print, or is that just my imagination?
No, we just bought an expansion, or Paul just bought an expansion,
A couple weeks ago. I found it. I mean, I haven't seen it in any local game stores here, but I found it on Amazon on sale for like $13 or something, a new copy. And it's by Cryptozoic.
It was going when it was like in print, at least like vastly in print. It was going for like 25.
Yeah, 25 or 30. Yeah.
So that's definitely a good price. I remember seeing it.
So what's Food Fight about, Ashley?
Food Fight, basically, the game is split into breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and you guys are randomly dealt 3 cards. It could be 2 lunches, 1 dinner, 1 breakfast, lunch, and dinner, etc., etc. And you randomly, no one knows what you're going to fight for. So let's say I'm fighting for breakfast and you're fighting for dinner, and Daniel's also fighting for dinner when there's only 2 dinners and 1 breakfast cards. You and Daniel will be fighting for dinner and I'll be fighting for breakfast. But I don't instantly just win breakfast, even though I really like to eat breakfast. I don't instantly just get it. There is a dog that you have to fight, and the dog randomly has its own cards, and you either win, or there is one card that is 21 points, and that pops up, 20 points, and then you die miserably without food.
And your cards are like cartoon-like warriors shaped like food, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. General chicken.
And you fight with these cards. These are like your little warriors or whatever.
Exactly.
Cool. You're building an army. Yeah. One of my favorite parts about the game is the drafting element, which she didn't mention.
Oh, so I love drafting games.
Basically what you do is you get dealt like 8 cards, 9 cards, something like that, and then you're looking, okay, there's these kinds of, there's, you know, breakfast, lunch, dinner, breakfast, dinner,
so
whatever,
you're going,
I'm going to build my army for this. Take a card, pass it on, take the next one, and then halfway through you're like, shit, there's no more breakfast, I'm screwed. And then you're having to, like, try and fix it on the fly. And then with what you've drafted, you build your army out of that. Yeah. It's weird because, like, on the box, I think, on the expansion box, I read that it said, like, can we play it in 20 minutes? And, like, we haven't played in less than, like, an hour and a half. So I don't know what it's talking about. And we understand the game, too. But
boxes are liars. They never trust any time a box says, play in an hour. No, well, fuck you, no.
But, usually double it, and that's about right.
But, yeah, Food Fight is, it's a lot of fun. It's pretty simple, a lot of fun. If anybody's played Epic Spell Wars... that's a fun game too, and it's the same kind of art style, and the Epic Spell Wars and Food Fight are both so silly that they each come with scenery that has no part of the game.
Yeah.
It's just like a little piece of scenery that you can stand up, like, for when you're playing.
Just to get you in the mood.
Yeah. So,
All right, so Tyler, what are you playing?
Pogs and Yahtzee.
Oh, hell yeah.
Pog.
My Alf is back. My thing. This time in Pog.
P-p-p-player, playing Pogs.
I'm designing a reskin for Yahtzee where it's post-apocalypse and zombies and Cthulhu. People will buy it.
Yeah, definitely. right before I came here, I decided to, I had bought Death Angel, the card game.
That's a great game.
Yeah, a little while back, and it's notorious for being a really challenging one-player game.
It's the best solo game of all time.
Yeah, a lot of people say that, and so I bought that to play like when I'm off of work and or I'm on a break or something like that. And I finally brought it out and started playing it, and then I realized the rules are actually kind of complicated, and there's a lot going on to absorb. Like, you can't... Some games you can, like, play through the game as you're reading through the book. It kind of just works out that way. This game does not work that way. And so, like, I literally have to sit down and really devote a lot of time to figuring it out, because I kind of set the game up and everything, and I did get to play, like, a few rounds, but then I realized, I was like, I can't. I just don't have time to do this right now. But... it was awesome. You're basically space marines fighting against waves of bugs, and you just have to survive and get to the end of this, like, randomly generated, like
spaceship.
Or scientist facility or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's a Warhammer 40K game,
yeah.
But it's the best aliens simulator I've ever played.
Yeah, no, it's definitely,
feels like more
yeah,
James Cameron
yeah.
aliens than anything else.
You even get to pick, like, character. Like, you get colors, and certain colors, like, represent different kinds of different kinds of marines. But within each color, you have, like, a couple different marines you can pick from, and they all have their own personalities.
Yeah, each one has a different name, so, like, when you're a badass marine, you've been killing guys and targeting, it's taken down, you just scream, no, not him!
Yeah.
Why did you shake the other guy?
Yeah, and so it seems really intense. I'm really excited to actually sit down and, like, get a chance to play that. And it's a 1-6 player game, too. It's not just a solo player. I've heard that the game plays much better just by itself,
It's a great solo game. It's not a great multiplayer game.
And then, like, going along with that, I've also been playing the Lord of the Rings LCG.
I haven't given permission to play two games.
Well, too bad. Lord of the Rings LCG. I think it's okay. I think it's pretty fun. It's really hard. It's a game that you can either play with one or two people. I kind of want to try playing it with two. I've played it with one, and it seems pretty fun so far. And it's basically just like any other LCG. You're kind of
it's a co-op LCG though.
It's a co-op LCG. You're not playing against each other or anything. But you're basically working together to fight off the Shadows of Mordor, and just in various scenarios that you pick to choose.
Do you know what its biggest problem is, honestly?
No, I've only played it a few times. So.
Its biggest problem is that it's not Netrunner.
Oh, that's true. That is very true. It is not Netrunner.
So I have a question. You touched on one thing in both of those games, which is solo play. Playing by yourself. Playing with yourself. Playing with yourself.
Jism.
As much board gaming as I've done, I've done a good bit. I'm a total nerd when it comes to it. I have all this stuff in my closet. I've never actually sat down and even attempted a single-player board game. Not that I'm turned off by the idea, I just, I've never really seen the appeal to it. It hasn't been, to me, I love board gaming so much for the social interaction. Mm-hmm. So can you maybe talk a little bit about what, A, made you want to play a single-player board game, and then B, what it's like? I mean, do you ever want to cheat?
I have no friends, so it's kind of hard. For me, it helps me understand the game that I'm playing a little bit more. And so if it's like a two player game, I'll play test it with me playing two characters, and I try to sort of separate myself as much as possible to get a feel for the game. I've done that. I'm trying to do that with another Warhammer 40K game called Relic. I just haven't had a chance to really go after that one, but I try to do that. Occasionally I have my girlfriend around that kind of helps me play the second player sometimes.
Your fictional girlfriend.
She's been on this podcast before.
She's not real, people. She's not real.
She was hired.
A paid actress.
I'm going to tell Christy, you said that, and then she's going to rip your heart out.
Heart out?
It's going to be tough for a cartoon character that you draw nightly.
The soundboard that I utilize.
That's a pretty impressive soundboard.
Player got nobody to play with.
No, I think playing by yourself presents an interesting challenge, because you bring up, like, why don't you just cheat, because there's nobody there to, like, keep you honest. And I find that to be a nice challenge, actually, to be like, can I do this by myself without the, you know, like, it humbles you in a way. Because, like, if you can manage to do that and the game does manage to beat you, you're like, oh, fuck, now I really have to beat this game. And it's like, I really have to do it now. And I have a feeling that Death Angel is going to kick my ass, like, more times than I win.
It will,
yeah,
I promise.
Yeah, I'm sure it will. And so, like, those games are really challenging. And I think it's just the challenge of it is from a personal standpoint and a gameplay standpoint, it's just an interesting differentiation from the norm. I love the social aspect of gaming more than anything in the world, but playing by yourself presents a completely entirely different challenge, and that's what
it's a case where why do you play video games by yourself?
I was just thinking about that.
Video games, yeah, you play single player. Yeah. There's a story playing back at you. Mm-hmm. It's more easily happening.
But
it's harder to cheat, too.
A game like Death Angel, it creates a story for you.
Yeah.
If you're playing by yourself, alone in a darkened room, playing Death Angel, your Marines are fighting aliens and dying one by one, and it starts getting increasingly dramatic. If you're like me and I have a big imagination, I'm always daydreaming. I like to write. I'm always thinking of new ideas. I'll never actually get made in anything. When I play Death Angel or even more story-driven games that you played solo, like Arkham Horror or Eldritch Horror, I get immersed in a story anyway. I mean, like sometimes I want to play a board game, but I don't have people. These games are like it scratches my itch. At the same time, I am allowed to generate. I'm allowed to have my fantasy time. That may seem a little silly, but I really enjoy it. Like. Zombicide is a great single-player game as well. It's another game where you have your named characters going on a dangerous dungeon crawl through zombie apocalypse, and as they die off one by one, since you're by yourself, you've grown an attachment to them, and it starts getting increasingly sad and desperate for you. And I guess for me, ultimately, playing a board game solo gives me the same feelings as playing a video game solo.
With those board games, though, once you beat them, do they have the option to change, like most board games?
Like Death Angel is random every different time. It's always completely different. Zombicide has dozens of different scenarios. Arkham Horror is generated randomly based on characters and decks. So most of those
games have like expansions that give you more options, and some of those games are even designed as an option to play solo. You know, like I think when Death Angel was created, I'm not entirely sure because I haven't read a whole lot about it, but I know that it sort of became a solo game. It's made to play with one player for sure, but like people online were like, if you want to play a solo game, you play Death Angel, and it became this huge kind of thing. And that's what I went online and I found. I was like, I'm curious about solo games, and I went online and I found Death Angel, and it sounded awesome, so I went and bought it. And it seems like that game has like is a rallying cry for solo players. You know, like it's like a challenge for people, and so. I think some of these games aren't necessarily designed to be solo, but they just happen to be great solo. And I don't know if these expansions sort of go more towards that, or if they try to expand it a little bit more. I'm not really sure, but anyway.
I think that board game companies have realized a large percentage of their clientele are fucking nerds and friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And are going to appeal to them.
Yeah.
I guess it's my turn to talk about what I'm playing.
What you playing?
And instead of talking about something that I've been playing, I want to pitch something to the group. It's something that we should play.
I won't.
There's a really, really terrific
Shut down.
Board game website called Shut Up and Sit Down. You should go read them after you're done listening to us. But they recently did a series on a... They're based out of London, and they participated in a citywide game where people armed themselves with water guns, were sent dossiers on who they had to assassinate, and had to go out and stalk the people they had to assassinate across the city over the course of like a month. And they knew people were hunting them, they had to hunt people. And ultimately, the game they described was a failure because the rule system was broken. But reading up on this type of game in general, the idea of fully immersive like games that like are meant to like absorb into your daily life, there are games out there where there are people like, for example, imagine this is a game. I am secretly the leader of one criminal organization, Daniel is the other, and our job is to recruit our friends and tackle various secrets and assassinate each other and backstab each other. And it's just like, it's like Resistance or another board game extended into theater played across the entire city. Or once a week, there's a certain number of hours where everyone has to embark on certain quests. Say, oh, the game master has left a clue buried at this area of the city. And all aside, so they go try to find it. You don't know who to trust, and you kill with water guns. And it seems really silly. But I think that could be like really fun. Like the kind of thing we can podcast about, for God's sake.
Well, the the game you were talking about that they played, I believe, is called like Assassin or something.
Yeah,
like
I
that.
Played that. I played it in college.
Yeah, a lot of people like a lot of colleges have groups where you play it. Unfortunately, I never got a chance to play it during college, which is something that I always was very, very much into the idea of.
I know there's a whole bunch of different versions out there, and I definitely want to do a version that's less about, oh, just killing each other, and more about finding reasons to go out and reasons to interact. And, for example, things like, if I'll say I'm a game master, I give Tyler his dossier. His dossier is, you are working for Daniel right now, which is secretly working for Paul. And the idea is that he has to play up that relationship, and like, you know, like ideas that there's a social dynamic thing going on that makes it fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And ideas like, when you die, you're not necessarily dead, you're just maybe you take some kind of hit or something. The idea is this something you could, like, you could play on and off, and I know we're talk about diplomacy in a few minutes, but diplomacy, the big fun there is the role-play elements that emerge organically, and I think this feels like that kind of distilled into something a little larger.
Yeah, kind of in the real environment, I think. I think the only thing I'd be afraid of would be, like, for example, if we were playing, like, this assassin game and your dossier or whatever is you need to kill Tyler at some point, mm-hmm. and there were no, like, DMZ rules, mm-hmm. and so anytime I went over to your house, I'd be like, wait a minute, like, is he just going to pull out a water, like, is he going to pull out a water gun and shoot me in the head and I'm out of the game?
I can actually comment on this from personal experience.
Because that sounds awesome. Like that's what I was about to say, is like, it sounds awesome.
So first off, I'm all for it, and I think it's a great idea, and it would be super fun to not only be a part of it, but to help pitch in on, like, figuring out the rule system before we started. So when I was in high school, a handful of buddies and I put together a game. I think we'd heard of it from another high school, but we created our own rule system that we just called Nerf Wars. And it was pretty simply a team, Nerf competition, but was constantly going on. My buddy Ben designed a website where we had scores and everything. But what ended up happening is we decided that, oh, and our best rule and one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life was that if you were naked, you were invincible.
And were you ever naked?
And so were a lot of girls too. So in high school, that's all that matters. But so one of the mistakes we made for friendships was that the game was always going on.
Yeah.
100% of the time. And we played this thing for like over a month. So it really divided people. And people were like, I'm not hanging out with them. Like, I'm only hanging out with the other four people on my team. Ever. Like, yeah. it became an issue. So my only suggestion for something like this is that there's...
on and off hours.
Yeah, exactly.
I must be like, very advanced. When is your good on hours for you this week? Arrange them and be like, okay, between these 6 hours and Saturday, the game's on. You can choose, just pay or choose not to, and you can go from there.
Well, and I think maybe having more of a point system, too, would help so that, it's going to be very, really entertaining if somebody gets caught off guard, for sure. Uh-huh. But I don't think that person should be punished for it, necessarily, because... Again, when you have something that is usually designated for a specific time, between these hours we're playing a game, 8 mm-hmm. and 11, we're playing this board game in this area doing this, and you mesh that with real world, then it becomes this weird situation of does it still stay fun? Now I actually have a job to do, and I can't be worried about you being outside my door trying to shoot me with a water gun. Like, I literally can't do that. And if I have to worry about that, then I'm gonna quit. And I don't want people. Yeah. I wouldn't want people to feel that way. So I think like a point system would be great, because like if somebody gets shot, okay, minus 15 points or whatever. Like that is great, because then they can still feel like they're part of the game and they can still play.
Yeah, for me, like, there'll be no permadeth. Everyone get like when you die, you get a new profile, get a new character.
Or whatever. Yeah.
I think seriously, don't worry. I wouldn't be outside your door. I would scale your balcony.
I would think that, and again, we should probably at some point take this offline, like just to like to not waste everybody's time while we're coming up with ideas.
Are you saying we're wasting our listeners' time?
No, not when I'm talking. But that's not possible.
They already turned the podcast.
I know. But what I was gonna say is, something to play with might be removing the physical dexterity, like
aspect of it, of like shooting with a water gun and making it more, borrowing more from diplomacy, which we'll be talking about shortly, in that it's more about
conniving.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, like working with people, and then like you find out, oh, you've been assassinated. That's, like, because these three people got together.
Like, if you get cornered and decided, or something, and, like, somebody hands you something, and it says, you're dead.
For example, someone is jumping out of the bushes and shooting Tyler isn't fun, but Paul's saying, hey, Tyler, we got a mission update from so-and-so. It was like, Daniel got a mission update from Game Master saying, send your men to pick up this location, this package at Burger King. They go to Burger King, and once you get there, Paul says, sorry, my action mission was this, and shoots him. That's fun.
Yeah, that's great.
As opposed to just random assassination.
Yeah, right.
Making it more about the intelligence and working with people.
Maybe at the same time, Game Master will drop a hint to somebody else saying that, and they can figure it out. They can warn Tyler in time.
Yeah.
They have to figure out that puzzle in order to...
No, Tyler, don't go to the Burger King. Don't get out of your car. He's like pulling up.
But I really, really want a Whopper.
Tyler, it tastes awful. It's bad for you.
Get back in the car. And then Jacob's there, like, running with Tyler with a piece of paper. It's like, no, don't go.
Don't grab it.
But the person who's texting you desperately could also be lying to you.
I know.
Yeah, and then they go, look in the back seat of the car. And there's a piece of paper there.
There's another rule variant where in addition to water guns, there's balloons. And if you can hear the balloon being popped, you're killed by the bomb. But for every single person with an earshot who's not part of the game, who's a civilian, you lose points for killing civilians.
That's interesting too. This game sounds very interesting, and I think that with like rule modifications and stuff.
So I think offline we should we're going to design our own version, and hopefully within the year try to put this together.
Yeah, it sounds fun.
Play a gon' play.
All right, so moving on to our main conversation of the day, we're talking about Diplomacy, one of the oldest, grandest, and craziest board games ever made.
Psychotic is a really good term for it.
But it's interesting because it's getting a lot of traction online recently. Grantland, the sports and entertainment website, had a writer go to World Championships and write a big article about what it was like to play Diplomacy. And he later did a episode of This American Life about the same thing. And so people have been all over the internet arranging Diplomacy games. And for the first time in a long time, Diplomacy's like getting publicly recognized by the community again for a game that's 60 years old now. And I guess Diplomacy is interesting because in addition to being so old, it outdates most modern war games, is that it's so simple. The basic setup is, it's Europe in the years before World War I. Everyone plays one of seven countries. And you set a timer for 15 minutes. You go negotiate. You come back. You turn in your orders on a piece of paper. Piece of papers are revealed. You do your moves, and you keep on playing. No dice rolling. The game is entirely based on skillful conversation, negotiation, and trickery.
And you're forgetting the part where you pull your hair out, you sweat like crazy, and you go insane.
All of these things do happen, I can confirm.
So I'm going to set the table for you before we let everyone else dive in and start talking. So when I hosted Diplomacy a few weeks ago, put the board in the coffee table in the living room. We had food and snacks. We had an area on the wall where you can post private messages.
Or public messages.
They were not private.
Bathe in the blood of Austria.
The entire run of my house was open, so when it's time to negotiate, I could literally pull Paul into another room to talk to him, away from earshot, or I can listen my ear to the door as Daniel and Tyler talked.
Like a dirty cheater.
So first of all, Paul, I want you
which is allowed in the game.
Yes, you are allowed to cheat. You're allowed to go tell Austria, I promise you I will support you in this fight, and then not support them in the fight, and actually you have killed them that round. So, Paul, I want you to tell everyone what you were wearing to this.
Yep. Well, Jacob emphasized that we must all be in costume. I was a little German schoolboy.
Why were we in costume, Jacob?
Normally in Diplomacy, your nation, whether it be Russia, England, France, Germany, Austria, Turkey, am I forgetting anybody? Oh, one of the seven nations involved.
France?
I said France.
Oh. I wasn't
England?
Listening.
Fuck you.
Clearly.
I said England. Fuck you.
Fuck off.
Nobody cares about England.
Normally your nation are drawn randomly before the game. I told everybody else, if you claim a nation in advance, you can play that nation when you get there, as long as you dress as that nation. So, idea was, since there's so much written about Diplomacy, you can claim Germany in advance and do 2 weeks of research on how to play Germany properly, and then come dress as Germany to make sure you can claim it. So, Paul, you're dressed as a German schoolboy.
Yes.
And what did you think about diplomacy before you came to the actual game?
I was a little scared. You happened to give us a lot of information, and I looked through as much as I could, and I just... I'm the kind of person that I don't understand the board... Like, I don't begin to understand a board game until I'm one round in. Like, just playing it. And that's... Just, so I was a little worried, but once I started getting into it, I understood what was happening and how fucked I was. The game, to me, is amazing, and one of the greatest gaming experiences I've ever had in my life was that day. I still have memories from that day. Like, they are, like, major world-changing events that happened. Basically, I sunk Germany in a false guess. Well, basically, what had happened was the other guy? What's his name?
Rod.
No, not Rod, but the.
Oh, David.
David.
My brother. My brother-in-law David, yeah. Was Italy.
Yeah. So he was playing Italy. And at one point, so in this game, you write down your orders on a piece of paper, and then you submit them to a bucket, and they get pulled out. So at one point, I don't know if I told you all this, he had written down orders, and he was holding the paper kind of open. And I could see it, and I looked.
Well, you weren't the only person that happened to.
Right.
That happened a lot during the
so
game.
So I saw the orders.
Yeah.
And I can't remember what country it was that he had written down he was moving into, but it was my brother and I were playing on a team for Germany, but we discussed, and we just, like, in the last minute, the 11th hour, drastically changed our plans and submitted our orders. And then he changed his plans. And in that move, he took over two countries in Germany because we just left them wide open because we thought he was going somewhere else. And, so our espionage failed us.
I will say one thing, because I've played with him before. David is really, really good at board games. I would not be surprised if he did that on purpose.
Oh, yes. It was, and then, one of the other great moments and memories I'll remember forever was when the Russians, half of which are right here in this room, Mr. Tyler...
When he said there was major consequences, he literally was serious.
So
major consequences.
Russia pulls us into the back room and proposes this.
This is, by the way, after Germany has art. It's pretty clear they're going down at some point.
Yes.
They're a sinking ship very fast.
Right. So
setting that up.
So Russia pulls us in and says, "So here's what we propose: you commit suicide, let us come in, take your nations, and then join forces with us." To which we said, "Okay, sounds great." Then Russia left, and we said, "Fuck Russia in the butt." That's when we started working with Austria, who we had previously
hated.
In the first half of the game, Austria was like the redheaded stepchild of this global war.
I was Austria, by the way.
Yes. It was embarrassing. But at this point, Germany went for whatever we could find. And I'm kidding.
Well, no, I loved, like, seriously, when that happened, and you came to all of the rest of us in the game, and you were so angry. Just so angry.
Well,
I had, like, when you proposed allying with me, I was England, by the way. It's like, I couldn't turn you down because I knew you were telling the truth because you were so angry.
When you called me in, you guys secretly, everyone was in a huddle, and they said, "Russia's doing this, we're forming a secret alliance, we're going to lie to Russia, string them along until we backstab them." And they said, "Please leave yelling like you're mad at us."
Yes.
And I left the room going, "Fuck you, I'll never do that."
Yes.
So Russia had no idea.
And so, I remember we were getting later in the game, and when Tyler and Rod were figuring out what was going on, and they were just so flabbergasted why anyone was helping us, because we only had two fucking supply depots, and they were just so confused.
So in the game, the way that you ultimately win diplomacy, and there is a way to win it, and the way to win it solo is if you take over 18 separate individual countries within the map. And those 18 countries have to have stars on them, which are supply depots. Getting supply depots allows you to build more units. So if you have 6 countries with supply depots, you can have 6 units on the board at any given time. So, basically, by Paul saying he only had two supply depots, he literally only had two units on the board, and they maybe had three total countries.
Yeah, for like three-fourths of the game.
Yeah, they should have died forever ago.
And so they were so confused as to why people were helping us stay alive. And I was so proud of myself, because the reason we stayed in the game for so long before ultimately being wiped out was because of diplomacy. Because I was successfully convincing
that's true.
Daniel, who's England, Laura, who is France, and Jacob, that they needed us to block Russia from taking the center. And it kept working. And they kept believing me. And you know what? We actually did block Russia. We blocked Russia for like for six a long turns. Time. It was like hours.
Well, that lost us the game. It straight up lost Russia.
You were
the
telling
game.
The truth yeah. there, yeah. too.
Because but they were so confused. And it was just, it's diplomacy. That's well, how yeah. we're winning. Well, you're not winning.
We're staying alive.
Yes.
One of my favorite Tyler. Moments. I'll have a quick thing. I'll let you take right over again.
But, oh, sure.
Fuck Daniel.
One of my favorite moments was when France turned on England and Daniel is under siege and things are looking hairy. I publicly said, sorry, Daniel can't help you, but I go to the bathroom and text him what everyone else is saying about him.
I remember that moment. We were going out of the game and France comes to us and goes, since you're dying anyway, can you help me betray England? And I said, no! England has been our only true ally in this whole game. He never betrayed us once. And then that's when Lars started calling me a traitor. And I said, because I won't be a traitor with you, I'm a traitor.
Oh, God. And I saw that coming from like a mile away. But Laura
was going to betray everyone.
Terribly out of position.
You fucked up early on, though.
Huh?
You fucked up early on with the rules.
Well, that I don't want to get into right now, because I might hold a grudge about someone not letting a thing slide. But
everyone else in the room agreed. I'm going to interrupt Daniel again.
Are you now?
Fuck Daniel!
When you want to move across water, you need to have a boat in the water territory. So you want to move something from Ireland to Paris or France, you have to write army from London to Paris, but you also have to write convoy using this ship. Daniel wrote that movement. He did not write convoy. Everyone else is writing convoy properly. I couldn't, on good faith.
See, and also, everybody got one mulligan, and then they were done. He had already had his mulligan, and that was it.
I mean, I would have said his unit should have drowned because they tried to swim. Yeah.
I would like to say other people did come up to me and say that, you know, that should have been able to slide there. So I believe the first mulligan was, what was it? It was something really, really ridiculously stupid, which is one of the things about learning how to play this game. It's knowing how to properly write down the orders. Yeah. And
it's
that's
super
a whole thing in and of itself. Yeah. It's because it's very, very, very unlike most board games you're playing now, wherein
you normally don't have to write down orders.
Exactly.
Period.
Like,
you just move things.
The thing I would compare it to is playing the Game of Thrones board game or something and using one of the water bridges, which is like, I'm moving from this territory to this territory. I don't have to say, I'm using this boat here, this boat there, the following boat there, and then I'm connecting it to this bay to get to this territory.
So here's why I love this. I love this because it forces you to be careful and to think everything through.
Which I get. I totally, like, if that was in round 10, yes, please, kill me. That's god-awful and that's stupid at that point. That was round 1 or 2, I think.
How do you really feel about it?
I can see your blood pressure raising right now.
This is what diplomacy does to friendships.
The thing about diplomacy is famous for being a game that has people yelling, screaming, fist fighting. I'm actually really impressed by how well everyone didn't get too angry. I remember the one point where a friend who's playing Turkey, we had a secret alliance that lasted the entire game, but I was trying to pretend like I didn't to other players. So when she walked by, I was talking to everybody else, and I yelled at her, what are you planning to do? Don't leave till you tell us. I intimidated her, and she ran away. I had to go find her and tell her, I'm so sorry. I had to put on appearances. And she was so mad. She was so upset. I felt so shitty.
I read that article you were talking about that the guy wrote, and I wonder if it's more people get more angry at other people when they're playing with strangers rather than we played with a group of friends.
Yeah, everybody knew each other.
And I think I think everybody had read what you had written to us and didn't want to, like, damage friendship. So I think we were all betraying each other, but we were all trying to
be nice about it.
You know, like, it's funny because I was in that alliance with France throughout most of the game, and I knew France. Just knowing her playstyle that it was coming, she was going to betray me. And that's fine. I knew that that was going to happen. The thing I was angry about, though, I was not angry at her because I knew it was going to happen. I was angry at myself for letting it happen when it ultimately did, because I left a back door open that she just slipped right through. And it was like, it was just one of those things where it was like, I knew I should have closed that earlier.
Mm, close that back door.
Back door.
Zip it up.
There is.
there is, and
I feel like
door.
Paul can talk a little bit more about this as well. But there is also this really interesting like thing you get into when you're starting to get counted out of the game, wherein you're scraping and scratching and clawing to find just to stay alive, but to also get anyone to be on your side to help you out. And I guess it was towards the end of the game, I was in the worst position. And I was actually able to get Turkey to ally with me because they had nothing to lose out of allying with me. And,
yeah,
because like,
you guys are far away from each other.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And it was
one
of those things where, you know, it feels good securing that alliance and, like, being able
when
to
you're
be
almost
like,
dead.
It's like, at the very least, I'm going to be a thorn in your side for a long time, France. Or, you know, in Germany's case over there, you know, Russia.
Yeah.
I think it was, you know, on that subject, you know, what was happening to us in Germany with only having the two supply depots, every turn we're just examining the board and going, okay, the only way we can survive is if France moves here, is if England moves here, if Austria does this, and I was having to run around to all these people going, okay, I need you to move here, please, okay? Uh-huh. Okay, just please move here. And it's going to benefit you here because of this, because we're going to be blocking Russia, I promise. I mean, you move here. And it was just like, and when the orders are being read, I'm just praying to God that everyone told me the truth.
Well, and then that's when Rod came to me and goes, we have to get rid of Germany. And I go, okay. And then we went straight to Laura and we go, you got to help us. And then that's when that screwed you guys over because you guys didn't really. You guys may have seen that coming, but not in that turn. And so we got. Ultimately, Russia got France to help them take over most of Germany and basically wipe out Germany.
France came to us right after you went to her,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
By the way.
She betrayed everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But we just basically ran out of moves.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you had nothing else to
do. We knew
they
were dwindling.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
we
yeah,
knew
yeah.
we were not going
yeah.
to survive. We just
eventually
wanted to hang on
yeah.
as long as we can
yeah.
and fuck over Russia because they told us to commit suicide. Like, it was just vengeance.
So, by the way, fuck Italy.
Oh yeah, fuck Italy.
I know he's your brother-in-law. He seems like a very nice guy.
But fuck Italy.
But fuck Italy.
So much fuck Italy.
Because here's the thing. All right, when you're eliminated from the game, you have a couple options.
Well, these are house rules. We invented these options.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's basically it's a big party that's lasting all day long.
You
so, want to
make it fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can leave and be a coward, and, you know, that's a thing you can do.
Take your ball and go home.
That's what I did.
Yeah.
That's what he did.
I was destroyed.
Or the other idea is you could join up with another force. Either, say, the people who conquered you, and you become
Co-conspirator,
yes. Or you can become an insurgent and, you know, attack the people who ended you. What Italy decided to do, however, was just hang out with France the entire time, whispering things into her ear when there are several times when there was something I know she did not see coming that he saw coming was like, oh, hey, by the way, you should really fix that over there. Like, I saw him doing that. And God damn it was just really fucking annoying.
Hey, you know what, though? Fuck Italy.
Fuck Italy.
Think about Italy traditionally in the games, that they have the lowest winning streak of any country because they're smack dab in the middle. They don't have good access to anything. Italy's best job is to be a speed bump. Italy, famously, a common strategy for Italy is to get whittled down into your one army and then hold on to that one place and support anybody who tries to come through and just ally yourself and win as an alliance. So, technically, Paul, if you have managed to hold on with your two armies for a little while longer, you could have gone the Italy strategy and just been a hindrance and an ally to whoever needed it.
I was trying to. That's what we were trying to do. We just, it ran out of moves. Like, and I knew it was going to run out of moves eventually. It wasn't, like, we made, every turn, we made the only moves we possibly could. It was just, it was like a game of chess. Eventually that queen was just going to get there and I couldn't stop it. And Tyler was that fucking queen.
So Jacob brings up an interesting point, though, in that I mentioned earlier that you can win solo by taking 18 supply centers. Once you have 18 supply centers, you've won the game solo. Well, the optional, the other way of winning is to win as an alliance. And the way that you do that is you all get together and you decide, let's have a vote for peace. And at this point, you all go around, write your, what if you're voting for peace or voting for to continue to the war, you write that down on a piece of paper, put it in a bucket, and we read the votes. Well, the interesting thing about that is, it didn't happen in our game, but the interesting part about that is you can convince people to vote for peace, and then you can vote for war, prolonging the war until it's over. So you can habitually be a jackass in the game and never end the war, which is what I'm pretty sure... If not everybody had been, like, really willing to do it, I would have been willing to bet Daniel would have kept the war going at the end of the game there.
No, Daniel was in such a bad position. He wanted war to end.
Yeah. I thought you guys
I guess that's true. Because you would. That's true.
I was
true.
In a terrible, terrible position. Yeah. Now, my thing, had the war continued, I felt like I could have hung on for a little bit longer.
For a little bit longer, yeah.
Because I had that really vital Turkey alliance. Because at that point, and if you can imagine this, Turkey at the bottom of the board... had moved their ships all the way up to England, and at that point they were pissed at France, and I was like, yes, use your anger. And it worked out well for me. I was able to start taking back some of my homeland and all of that and become basically a roadblock, because I feel like that's what you ultimately become if you get into that position. Like, you can become the useful roadblock for some alliance
when you're when there was five of us left, Italy had been eliminated and Germany had been eliminated. We started talking about peace. It had been 8 hours or so, and everyone was getting tired and angry. And I had allied with Russia after an entire game of being enemies with them. You have an idea of how the Russian alliance had to happen? I had to promise I'd do a certain thing, give them my orders, and let them turn in for me while I turned in their orders. We were trading orders. So we could read each other's orders to make sure we weren't lying to each other. But in the end... Turkey was the only one who was saying, we don't want to have peace. So Russia and I said, fine then, we're going to surround you and go after your weak back end where you have no troops and just hover there because you can't defend it until you agree to peace. And they agreed to peace.
Yeah, and I think that was interesting. First of all, the game made me feel super shitty afterwards. It really did. Like, I had fun, but at the same time, I kind of sat down and I thought about all of the lying I did in that game.
Uh-huh.
And all of the horrible things I did to everybody.
Like Germany?
Like, mainly Germany, but but also, this never came to fruition, and we straight up told Turkey this to begin with. The cool part about the game is, if you schedule it enough in advance, you can already start talking strategy with other countries very early on in pre-gaming. And we had been talking to Turkey, and specifically Italy, beforehand. Well, Russia decided to have the most secret alliance in the entire game with Italy, in that... We basically never talked during the game whatsoever at any point. There was one point where I walked by, dropped a note by him, he read it, and then he dropped a note by me. And that was the closest we ever got to talking. Because the idea was that we were going to be allied with Turkey, and actually we did stay allied with Turkey the entire game. But what we were going to do is, at a certain point, we were hoping we could knock out Austria as soon as possible. That was that was the big thing that we wanted to do.
And you didn't.
And it didn't happen.
You didn't.
So, we were still allied with Turkey, and eventually we knew that they were going to be a problem for us, because in late game, Turkey and Russia basically share a border. Other than that, it's in their best interest to work together and try to wipe out the central if you can. But anyway, we knew they were going to be a thorn in our side later. So we had Turkey as our backup plan. Or we had Italy as our backup plan. Because Italy, in general, goes against Turkey just because of what they're going after, their proximity, all of this stuff. And so our plan was to sweep west and then back down to the southeast, and hopefully we could maybe come up with a victory or something like that. Unfortunately, we never got to do that because Italy was knocked out way sooner than we had hoped and we had planned.
You underestimated the power of Austria as well. Here's the thing about my plan as Austria was that I was friends with everybody and enemies with everybody. No alliance was ever 100% secure. No, with the exception of my animosity with Russia, there was no enemies that were 100% happening constantly. So I would learn something and immediately tell everybody else. And they would tell me something else, and I'd immediately tell everyone else.
You fucking dick.
So,
are you surprised?
So no. I survived by sowing so much chaos around my borders that Russia had no way of actually getting support to attack me.
Yep, and that was the problem with that. And actually, at a certain point, we even came to you when we were on our heels. There was, for a while there, we might have been the first country knocked out of the...
You were in trouble.
You left your country, your nation.
Like, no, just
and
open.
Here's the thing, though. We survived, and we survived awesomely. We kicked ass after a certain point, and we built ourselves back up to a point where we actually were such a formidable force that if the game had continued, it would have been very hard to get rid of us. Absolutely. Like, sure. No doubt, because we had troops in, like, every single sector that we actually had.
But I would like it to be said... Holy shit, you made so many enemies in the first
couple
rounds.
Oh, I know. Well, no. After about halfway through the game, everybody was after us. Rod and I took a coffee break, and I straight up told Rod, I was like, dude, everybody's against us. I'm 100% sure everybody's against us. And so, like, we need to figure something out. And so we, like, put our brains together, and we figured it out. And our biggest mistake as Russia, if you're ever playing Russia in diplomacy, do not, for the love of God... Do not go after Germany. Don't do it. It's a black hole of nonsense and stupidity that will never get you anywhere.
That's right.
That's the happiest I've ever seen.
That's all I wanted. That once I got to that point, that's the only thing I wanted to do was cockblock Russia and infuriate them.
The game fuels your pettiness and anger in a great way.
Yeah. And it, ultimately, though, I found the game to be... an amazing experience. I had so much fun preparing for the game and, like, figuring out strategies and, like, reading up on it and looking at the board and, like, figuring out opening moves and stuff like that. Ultimately, I ended up throwing almost everything out the window as soon as the first orders were done, because at that point, it's like, well, now I have to change strategies.
You have to react.
You can do all the preparing you want, but you have to react. You don't even know... Like, I didn't even know if Turkey was gonna... go against me immediately, because they could have easily. And so I think the game is incredibly enjoyable, incredibly frustrating, so intense. I don't think I've ever experienced intensity like that game.
And as you said, it's an old-fashioned game. There's nothing high-tech or fancy about design. If you like Game of Thrones takes a lot of these ideas and makes them snazzier. This game is just talking. The gameplay itself is a little clunky at times. Like, there are certain rules that are a little arcane, but no game makes me feel like this game did.
The board that we had, if we play again, I would want to play on a different version of it, because it was way too small
The current printing by Wizards of the Coast is shitty. What I've done is I'm actually in the process of buying new pieces to replace the current pieces, which are way too big for the board.
I did see an older version at a local half price, by the way.
Pick it up.
Yeah, I didn't.
Buy it.
Probably not.
I don't know.
Buy it. Well, what I'm doing is I'm looking. My options are either I'm going to buy a big jar of tiny colored cubes that just make of cubes, which is the cheaper option.
Three-dimensional would be better for that game than the things that are very similar. This one's gray. This one's black.
Eight millimeter colored cubes is what I'm talking about.
Nice. Yeah.
Or if people want to chip in because I can't afford it myself, I'm looking into actual war miniatures at the Great Hall Games, which is like it's like $15 for like 18 of them. So I need, it's not cheap.
I'd buy my own. That's cool.
So I want to start wrapping up this conversation in the next few minutes. Ashley, as a person in the room who has not played Diplomacy, does this sound like fun to you?
It sounds like fun, but in relationship to what Tyler was saying about how you felt afterwards, yeah. Paul came home and he was He looked so mentally exhausted, and I swear while he was sleeping, he was screaming nine. And later on, we would be driving somewhere, and then he would just freak out, and then he would look at me, he's like, oh, diplomacy flashback. I'm okay.
She's not joking.
Not joking in any of these. So, I mean...
And that's why you were killed quickly.
I would love it.
I was in the game for like 6 of the 8 hours, I'd just like to say. Anyway.
I think I would personally love it because I know the listeners can't see my face, but I can make a really, really sad puppy dog face, and I am so happy to stab someone in the back. So I think that it would be a very, very fun game.
Can we see that face? It's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
She's always the Cylon.
So diplomacy, I recommend it. It's super cheap. I just recommend getting new pieces for the board, and just get good people. Like, don't get people who are gonna be jerks. Don't get people who are gonna flake out early. But if you can get a good group of people who have thick skin and have senses of humor, it's unforgettable.
Well, and I think the way that we went about it was really great in that it wasn't just like a game day. It was basically like a house party.
It was like an event. It was a big deal.
It was a party that was going on, and we were playing diplomacy, and that obviously completely overtook the entire day, but like there were snacks, there were, you know, it was a good time. It was a good gathering of friends.
I would never implement alcohol though. That would be a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, just you have to stay focused, and then I feel like it could intensify anger.
I feel like I actually could have used a beer during that game on more than one occasion.
Well, you could have, because you were just fucked. But says the guy who's fucked.
I was about to say, look who's talking.
I mean, I'll say this, you know. With all the stuff we're saying, like, fuck Italy, and the shit that, like, Russia did, and, like, all that stuff, like, again, I said it earlier, but one of the great, probably the greatest, like, tabletop gaming experience I've ever had was that day, playing that. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
It's so unique.
It's so unique, and it's so much fun, and it's one of those things where... Like, I've played the whole day-long board game thing with Twilight Imperium, and I've played it with Diplomacy. And I prefer the Diplomacy. It's kind of more fun.
I thought Twilight Imperium, I played it just one time, but it was draining to me in a very different way. You're just staring at a board and trying to focus on it, whereas Diplomacy, it's just the constant interaction. It's like 20% a board game and 80% a social interaction game.
Lots and lots of casual stereotyping.
Yes.
I can't choose between Twilight Imperium and Diplomacy. That's like choosing between two babies. One baby that's super outgoing.
Pick one or they both die now.
Honestly, you're on
your deathbed.
If forced to pick, Twilight Imperium. If I was forced to pick.
Nobody likes you anyway.
I would do the same, but Diplomacy is
incredible.
It is not going to be for everybody, though. Yeah. It's just, if you play it right, if you play it the way it was kind of meant to be played, you have
to have the right group.
Yeah, and you have to, and honestly, the closer the friends, the better, because I think the less likely hostilities are to be involved.
Also, people you know better is great, because I can like look at you and say...
You know already.
I'm around you off enough to be able to read you in an interesting way.
Well, like, for example...
I know what your lying face is.
There was a thing at the end of the game... where we straight up did not believe anything Jacob was telling us, because in every other board game I've ever played with him, he has always screwed everybody over. And so we consciously made a decision to screw him over, and he was like, "What the fuck, guys?" And I was like, "We are so sorry. We legitimately felt bad about it because we thought he was going to betray us immediately. So we betrayed him first, and I felt terrible about it.
I had no interest in ever betraying you.
Yeah, I know.
We had a rock solid alliance at that point.
By the way, the one thing in any board game you play with Tyler and Jacob, it's so easy to play off of Tyler's suspicion of Jacob.
All the time.
No matter what. Any game you're in, when you're playing with Tyler and Jacob's in the same game.
I never trust him.
Like,
I don't trust him.
They could be on the same team. It could be a completely co-op game.
I actually disagree with the same team thing. I think when Jacob and I are in the same team.
I'm using hyperbole.
We're powerful. We're a powerful duo. All
right, so let's go around the circle and wrap this up. Daniel, describe Diplomacy in one word. Okay, Tyler?
Intense.
Paul?
Fuck.
Ashley?
9.
Evil. And we're back with our newest feature, Tyler's Kickstarter Corner. That is two K's, by the way. And in this new segment,
so close.
TKK.
I feel like
Tyler
Clutch Clan.
Redo that.
All right. That wasn't funny. It was actually very funny.
I thought it was funny. I think you should keep all of this. I think you should just keep going so he can't edit it out.
We're going to keep this going. Daniel insists that I ran this. I'm not going to because I know what the white people listening want. They want racist
No.
Now you've gone too far.
Which is just far enough.
I have so many black friends.
Name one.
He has so many black friends.
Okay, for reals, this is our new segment, and this is Tyler's Kickstarter Corner. And what this means is Tyler is going to have 1 minute to pitch us on one or more Kickstarter projects. Board games are becoming increasingly huge in Kickstarter. A lot of major companies are putting them on Kickstarter first to get publicity and to get pre-orders out and just gauge how the market will react. So keeping an eye on Kickstarter is actually really, really important if you want to actually become a serious board gamer. So what we're going to do, Tyler has 1 minute to pitch it, and then we will respond and grade him on how well he has pitched us. We're not going to criticize the game, because that's evil. What we are going to do is hopefully make fun of Tyler a lot.
Smash him. We're going to grind him into a fine powder.
How are we grading? Is it A through F, 1 through 5?
I think it's just like whether you would back it or not.
No, you can pick your own grade.
Oh, okay, whatever. Oh, okay. Yeah, then do whatever.
Like mine is hug Tyler to punch Tyler in the nuts.
There you go.
Nuts?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so everyone ready?
Where does punch Tyler in the butthole fit on that scale?
Right above nuts.
Oh, okay. Because
butthole's unpleasant, but balls really hurt.
What if like a finger popped out and went into the butthole?
Well, it depends.
Well, I mean, that could be pleasurable.
Who says that's going to be painful?
Wow, we learned a lot about Tyler.
Okay. Tyler's Kickstarter Corner.
Okay, let's all sing
butthole
the theme.
Fun.
Here's what we're going to do. We're all going to sing the theme song together, and then Tyler begins. You guys ready?
What's the theme song?
Tyler's Kickstarter Corner.
Can I hear it one more time?
Tyler's Kickstarter Corner.
Okay, I'm ready to sing it.
All right, 3, 2, 1.
Tyler's Kickstarter Corner.
Okay, so here's a game. It's called 101. It's a card game. And it formerly was called Binary. And the main idea behind the game is that you're using programming, very, very small programming languages, very basic programming languages, to basically control lines of code, and by using zeros and ones. It's a two-player game. One player plays the zeros, one player plays the ones. All you're really doing is placing ones and zeros on a grid. Each grid has a line. Each line is worth a certain amount of points. As soon as you have three of a combination of ones and zeros on one line, you unlock the next line, which is worth more points. Each number has a deck. Each deck has certain coded programming languages from actual programming. So you can paste things, you can save things, you can delete things, you can change things. And so as a result, you can go through. I tried. I got pretty far.
All right, Tyler, here's what I know about this game, based on your description. A lot of cards, lots of numbers. What's the point?
Ones, zeros.
One, zeros.
I didn't get to the end.
If then.
You can't talk.
Ums.
What? I do. It does kind of sound interesting to me. I would like to hear more. Yeah. Too bad I can't because he failed.
Fucker. Actually, I'm right. I love games that have these unique, like, out-of-the-box themes. Huh? And it actually sounds like a really unique way to take an abstract puzzle game and, like, make it sound in a way that make it into a something that's, like, relevant and interesting and, like, completely fresh. But Tyler fucking failed.
Yes, I would love to hear more about this game, and I'll look it up on my own, but it has nothing to do with Tyler's pitch. Like, absolutely nothing
to
do with
it. I'm feeling that each one of these is going to be
talk.
Like this.
What, you
hey,
can't
hey,
talk.
Hey, quiet.
What was the pitch? I missed everything.
I mean, I didn't
miss much.
Look, I'm not going to joke about it, and then I'll joke about it, but I do find it. I mean, we're interested in looking at more because we heard his pitch. It's a shame we didn't get to hear the rest of it. Who knows how long he was going to blather on. But I would for the grade, you know, I'd probably punch him in the butthole, but I wouldn't pop a finger in there.
I'd grab his dick really hard, but not so hard.
I don't know who that's
both
benefiting.
Of these are really.
This is weird.
Yeah.
I want to go home.
I can't wait till I can talk about this.
Nope.
You just sit in your corner.
I would say if his belly button is an outie, I would pull it and I would twist it a bit.
Oh, wow. I don't know. Maybe it would be something where I would have his hair shaved to look like a pop star. So whenever he walks down the street, he's publicly humiliated, just as he is now.
So Tyler, shaven, cock pulled, ass punched, and
butthole punched.
Without the finger.
It was yours, Daniel?
No finger. Oh, if his belly button is an outie, I would grab it and I would pull it and twist it a bit.
So, all things considered, you did pretty good for your first Tyler's Kickstarter corner.
Hey, that's all the
round of applause. Round of applause, everyone.
Golf clap.
We'll have a link to this Kickstarter in the show notes.
Yes.
So that's going to bring us to the end of this episode of the Diecast. I know we had our hiatus. I was really busy with life things. Daniel was out of town on work. And things got really hectic. And I hate that we couldn't bring the show to you guys in a more timely manner. The point we're going to try to make from here on out is to have it out every week. And we're going to try to keep it interesting. We're going to keep it more fun. You're going to see a lot more crazy ideas like Tyler's Kickstarter Corner. And if you like what you hear, if you like any ideas or games we talk about, let us know in the comments. Give us suggestions. If you have any ideas for our Austin-wide water gun game, please let us know. We want to hear from you. If you're listening and enjoying us, let us know. We will take your feedback and we'll make the show better. We'll make it for you. So let's go around and just say goodbye, Daniel.
Goodbye?
Sorry, that was fucking hysterical. Thanks for having me on, guys. It's awesome to be part of the podcast.
Oh, yeah, a warm welcome for our new co-host, Tyler, by the way.
If you hate him in the comments, let us know.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, if you hated my Kickstarter pitch.
If you like him, you can be quiet, but if you hate him, please let us know.
Troll me incessantly.
Thanks for having me on. It's always fun.
What is your name?
Oh, I'm Paul Gandersman.
Yeah.
Not pronounced like that. I don't know why I said it. Paul Gandersman.
Yeah, you can just sit back.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for having me. I'm Ashley. It was a pleasure to, I still kind of want to shave you and make you look like a pop star.
Maybe someday.
Okay.
And I'm Jacob Hall. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob S. Hall. And for more great shows, please go to oneofus.net. There's sports, there's movies, there's TV, there's art. It's like, if you hate board games, you know, don't listen to the show anymore. Go to one of us on
Why are you listening to this?
Yeah, why? What are you doing with your time at this point? But if you hate board games, I promise you one of us.net has more things. But until then, we will insert closing banter.
Fuck.
Italy.
Cock sucking and butt fuckery in this room, 45 minutes.
Test, who's test. In?